All right, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. Oh. Excellent. Well, we should have an exciting session today. We're going to talk a little bit more on the technical side of things. We'll talk a little bit about disk formulas, and we'll talk a little bit about, there's a lot more people still coming this way?
Yeah, they
okay.
Just didn't do that.
Okay. We'll hold a minute. All right, we're just going to get rolling into things here. I'm Tony Tatey. Thank you for joining us today. I'm just going to toss this right on over to Eric Nyontog. Brighton Tonka. Long day, sorry. And Eric is from the Library of Congress. He works as a scientist. I'll let you take it from there.
Hello, my name is Eric Breitung. As you said, I'm from the Library of Congress. We've got a few scientists in a huge space, lots of equipment. And I'm going to talk to you today about sort of a method that we're working on to be able to pre-identify before you play a tape, tape degradation, and mostly sticky shed, though I can't necessarily distinguish all the time what we're detecting. I'd like to just credit some of the people who actually did a lot of the work. Samantha Skelton and Juan Rodriguez took thousands of spectra for us. And Peter Allier has helped with some of the sound engineering aspects of trying to understand whether our test is affecting the fidelity of the tape. And those are sort of underway still. Dr. Stephen Morgan is from University of South Carolina. He is my collaborator in doing some of the statistics and modeling. And he and I actually got a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services to do this over a 3-year period. So I give them a lot of credit for putting a little faith in us and letting us give it a try. Let's see. And I want to put this in a little bit of context for the at the Library of Congress, who just put out this preservation plan. And in section 1.7, talks a lot about the hope that science will be brought into this field and sort of the ideas and paths that should be hopefully gone down. And so I believe everybody got one of those in their packet. And I think Saturday morning there is a session on what's in it. So I probably don't need to mention why we need this in this field, so I'll probably skip over these pretty quickly. But we're essentially, you know, there are a lot of tapes. This is from a 1990s survey. We're looking at millions of tapes that need to be transferred. This is probably mostly your jobs. And a lot of the times you go to play a tape and the tape will slough off onto the guides. And you've lost all that information. So what we're trying to do is avoid that from happening in cases where we're not sure whether they're degraded or not. And so our research goals are to basically ask the question, can we use some other method? And we're using infrared spectroscopy, which I'll show you sort of how we take those measurements and what it is, but basically it's taking infrared light, guiding it into the tape, and sort of probing the molecules that are in the tape. And coming out and saying, are those molecules the types that might be on a degraded tape or not? And that's a tougher question than you might think. We also have to ask the question, you know, will these damage the tape? Can we do it harmlessly? And then another bigger question, I think, is even, well, I can do it maybe with audio materials, but does it work with video, and can I use the same database of infrared spectra for both, or for every format, do I need another database? And, you know, it's at the beginning, as I said, that those students had taken thousands of spectra, so that takes months of sitting and taking spectra. And so if we could do this all with one database, that would be great. So the history of polyester urethane degradation is, I think, well established in the literature, and it's probably been talked about at this conference in the past. But there are a lot of binders that hold the magnetic particles onto tape substrates. In our case, they're usually mylar or polyester substrate. And then the magnetic particles are held with a binder. The one that seems to be most problematic is polyester urethane. And I've got this sort of a backwards, actually. This equilibrium is supposedly that the polyester breaks down in, with moisture and heat, just room temperature conditions, and you make smaller segments. These segments can migrate through the tape, and it's in the theory is that that's what's sticky on the surface of these segments. And it somewhat makes sense if you take a cross-linked polymer, break it down into smaller pieces, that's what a glue would be. And this is old data that was repeated at the library. Other people have done this, where you basically take the magnetic material and binder off the surface of a tape and figure out how long the polymer chains are. And the degraded tapes tend to have smaller or shorter chains than the non-degraded tapes. So there are ways to figure out whether your tape is degraded or not, but this method requires scraping, you know, material off the surface of your tape, and it's not very fast. It's a very slow process. But you know, I think I believe that the literature is correct. Polyester urethanes are the ones that we have to worry about. So most of our sampling will be on polyester urethane tapes. And the way we're taking our data is with a attenuated total reflectance measurements, which is what this device allows you to do. You take this piece of tape and put it over this, in this case it's a germanium crystal, and that allows you, and you put a pin on top and you push pressure on it, right? And that gets it in close enough contact with the crystal that has the infrared light going through it, and then you can read sort of the infrared spectra of the organic molecules in that tape. So the question I'm asking here is, you know, what's the best ATR device to use? Which one's the safest for our tapes that doesn't harm it? And we went through the commercially available versions of these, just a few of them, with different crystals, diamond, I think we even did a zinc selenide and germanium. And we basically found that the geometry of this one, the germanium one, was the best. It's sort of a domed crystal, rather than being super flat, and it's big in diameter. So relative to, if you look at this spot here, it's tiny, and there's, you know, relative to the penny versus this one. And so we found that with the diamond one, you got a much more damage because the edge where the diamond and the metal hit isn't exactly even. And so you can do this with the diamond if that's all you had, but it's easier if you've got a larger crystal, and there are some other advantages as well. But we think we can make a tiny little smudge. This is a couple millimeters in diameter, the smudge that we were pushing on a tape that's using the germanium crystal. So I'll show some fidelity stuff on using that germanium crystal. This is essentially taking a modern tape from, because I don't remember the manufacturer, this, from New Jersey. And we pre-recorded a sine wave. It's a high-frequency audible signal. And then went back to that same exact point and put a bunch of damage on that tape using a ballpoint pen. We just hit the pen on this tape 36 times to see what we could detect with our playback machine, which was from the 70s, and using analog and digital conversion and all this. And we're able to see that the blue was the original sine wave, and then with where the pen marks are, this 36 pen marks, you know, you lose intensity, so these are the dropouts that you'd see. With the germanium crystal, where you'd hit this 36 times, we see just very slight differences. And that's over, you know, thousandths of a second or so with 36. So the measurement should only take one of those. So in theory, we're at 1/36 of the effect that we can see here with this playback technique. Audibly, I can't hear the difference, but maybe there's some people in this audience that can. And you're more than welcome to try that out. Maybe at some point I'll put it on online. So what we did... we'll do. So what we did to test this initially was looked at quarter-inch audio tapes from the Library of Congress's collection, and we had some help from Gene Deanna's group in selecting these. They were randomly selected, but basically we wanted to make sure there were degraded tapes and non-degraded tapes in this set. And all we have to go on and for what tapes they are is the dates of their recording. We don't know what kind of the make and manufacture these tapes are. And so this spreads from, you know, the early 20s to the mid-90s. But clearly a lot of these are preservation copies, so this big chunk must come in here. And so those are likely not, it's sort of essentially, we can't know, and probably you don't generally know what type of tape you're looking at. So you don't know when you go to play it whether it's going to be a degraded tape or not based on the make and model. So here's sort of what an infrared spectrum looks like. Any one of these are all of tape. And what people have been doing in my field for years is trying to eyeball these spectra and see where the differences are. And so these brown arrows are some of the wave numbers or areas where people say, well, there's a shoulder here, or this peak is generally larger with degraded tape and this one's shorter. So we just need to, you know, give these spectra to the sound engineers and tell them what they're looking for, and they can, you know, take these spectra and differentiate, right? Well, it turns out there's a couple problems with that, that you can tell this is a huge mess. And if a scientist does it, you only get about 75% of them right, where 50-50 is guessing, right? So it's just not good enough to put into a production line. But I looked at it and said, well, why are we looking at just five of these wave numbers? Maybe it's a more subtle change. And when you're looking at, I don't know how many makes and models and manufacturers of these tapes, there's no way that I could give you a few wave numbers and say, yeah, this will work for all those tapes. And so what I'm doing with my collaborator is trying to look at statistical methods for looking at all that data. And I won't go into it with much detail, but next few slides are going to talk about principal component analysis and linear discriminant analysis, where we take, let's say this is the tape data from all of one tape, so this might be 50 spectra from one tape, and this would be 50 spectra from another tape, and you're trying to differentiate those as maybe one of them's degraded and one of them's not. Principal component analysis will sort of draw vectors through that data and project all the data down onto this line. So if you took all this data and projected onto this line one, it would spread, so one would be this one. I believe it spreads the data out like this in the widest way possible. It takes the most differentiation and variation of that data into account. And then linear discriminant analysis takes these vectors that you get by doing that as many times as possible to count for all the variation and sticks it in and sort of does that same analysis again, but it knows whether one is a group of data and two is a group of data that are separate, tries to separate those as much as possible from each other while at the same time minimizing the amount of separation you get within one of those groups. So this is a great separation with the group one and two, and that would be this vector here, right? So you dump all that data onto this vector, and you can separate those two and say, okay, maybe these are the degraded ones and these are not, and then you put in an unknown tape, and if it matches up on this side, well, then you can identify it as degraded, and then we go test it by playing it and verify it. So that's the short version of how we do this. The way we've done it in the lab is to take, we started with just 10 or 11 tapes, rather than that first thing was five tapes we were looking at. And now we're comparing, instead of five spectra, we're looking at 220 spectra all at one time. And I go through and sort of normalize the data and pick out the areas where we know chemically there's the most differentiation. And statistically, that is confirmed, that here's all the data we get with all these wave numbers, but there's not much going on out here. And we call this the fingerprint region, so we select that data, and then we normalize it so that we can account for these big gaps that might just be baseline differences. They're not real data differences. And so we run the PCA and the LDA on these, and we can take all those wave numbers that we're looking at, it's about 1,000, and convert that down to five or six vectors that account for all the variation in the data. And we do all our statistical processing on that data. We dump that into the linear discriminant analysis, and all of these clusters would be the tapes we're looking at. And now those are in this new three-dimensional space of linear discriminant space, and we ask the question, do they cluster together? Do the degraded and the non-degraded cluster together? So I rotated in three-dimensional space to make it into two-dimensional space. We cut out one of the axes, and sort of arbitrarily, you can sit there with this cube and watch and look at the data and try and figure out where they're clustering, if they are. And the green ones are non-degraded and the red ones are degraded. And this was a trend that I saw pretty consistently when I did this with lots of tapes. And so this one would be an unknown tape where I didn't know whether it was degraded or not until I tested it against this data set. And it clearly clusters in with the non-degraded. So I did this with all 100 tapes. And when, I think here's an example of one where it misclassifies. And it sort of shows this arbitrary rotation and the problem with it. That here's a 3D space, and in 3D space there's the unknown. Here's this cluster, which is probably this cluster, and you start rotating things around. And it misclassifies, probably not because the program misclassifies, but because I drew my line in the wrong place. And so basically I'm saying this works fairly well. So 89 tapes were correctly identified based on the playback information. So we gave it to the sound engineers at Culpeper, and they said which ones were degraded and which ones weren't. And then my program says, well, here, we correctly classified it. I think it was 89 out of the 94. But then the better version is to take all of the data that we have. So we took all of the non-degraded tapes and all the degraded tapes, put those into separate bins. And so this is a couple, this is 1,500 spectra, let's say, and this is 1,000 spectra, something like that. And we say those are the two groups, run this same process. And this time, rather than looking at all the wave numbers, we do another statistical process that looks at the places in here where you get the most differentiation and cuts off everything else. So everything above this red line, we use that data. Everything below, we don't. And really, it's those wave numbers. And so this should help refine our process and make it so the computer does less work. And here is the end result of that, which is all of this stuff in blue are the non-degraded tapes, and all the degraded tapes are in red. And you can see, hopefully you can see that there is some overlap, and that overlap is the error, that there's 8% of the tapes are in that overlap region where they're not classifying correctly as degraded and non-degraded. But that means that 92% of the time we're getting it right with this 94 tapes. And I should say that the reason it's not 100 tapes is because six of them were not polyester urethane binders. They were some other binder material, which is important to know. And this spectral process will allow you to identify the ones that are not polyester urethane. You can take those out of this, and you couldn't run them on this and get accurate information. But that'll be something that'll be easy to incorporate into the program to be able to say it's not polyester urethane, you can't use it, you have to actually play it to figure out if it's degraded or not. And so the next big question is, is that data set useful? Can you take all this data back to your sound engineering booth with an IR spectrometer, and will it work on your collection? Or is this just going to work on the tapes that we have at the Library of Congress, because a lot of those were preservation copies and maybe weren't tape materials that were being used commonly in recording studios or sale to the public? And so this grant is allowing us to go around and find tapes from NPR, from New York University's library, from MoMA, so art institutions, and hopefully radio stations. We're actually currently trying to, we put together a survey, and hopefully there will be people at this conference that will be interested in filling this out. So if this is something you might be interested in doing, to let us know what materials are at most at risk at your institution, we will decide what databases to build based on that feedback. So if you want to be a part of that system or that feedback, please contact me, and I'll let you in on where the link is for the survey. And we'll gladly take your feedback. And from that, we may ask if people are interested in having us test our system on their collection. We've got a portable spectrometer that we can come out and add both that data to our database and find out whether our system is working. So without having that data yet, what I do have is sort of an interesting set of data that I was able to collect from very generous donations from both professional, I believe very non-professional, sound recording folks on the web, and I'm sure some people in this room sent me some tapes, and we had a few at the Library of Congress as well, that I found formulations that were reported to degrade based on lists that I found on the web and in the literature and so on. And hopefully, if you've got things you want to add to this, feel free. It's not something that I've tested. But I'm trying to collect these, and I have 34 new old stock makes and models of tape. So I only take tape that is still in the plastic wrapper, so I know what's inside is what it says it is. And then I test those, and only a small subsection of these were actually degraded. I think it was 13 of the 40, sorry, not of these, but the tapes that I have, 40 of the formulations reported to degrade, I have 13 of those. So I don't have all of these, and I would gladly take them to test them if you have them. And so I basically took all of my 34, degraded and non-degraded, and stuck them into my statistical processing method and asked the question, which of those tapes correlate to the tapes that are in my Library of Congress collection 94 samples, right? And so of those, I sort of use this process where if these are the degraded and non-degraded, where I use just the principal component analysis, so it's not separating them into groups. It doesn't recognize groups in this case. But I need that to happen, because if it did, it would throw this one like way out in left field. It would think this was a group on its own, but I'm trying to ask the question, is this part of one of these two groups? And so in this case, it's not. It's outside of the realm of these, but in this case, it's very close to the, probably that's the degraded side. And so I categorized all of the 34 this way and said that if I were to try and label the makes and models based on my limited subset of makes of new old stock, I would say these are maybe the tapes that are in our Library of Congress collection. The more I expand that, the more I can maybe say whether that list on the last page is correct or not. But it's sort of an interesting way to use this. And here's the visual or the graphic version of that test. So these all these clouds of gray are a particular make and model of tape. And the ones that are circled in green up here are the ones that correlate to the Library of Congress's collection, that I'm correlating to the Library of Congress collection. So sort of an interesting application for this. It's more playing around than of much use, because most of the tapes that you have don't tell you the make and model. The next question is, do videotapes, can I use the same data set for video and audio? And here's the result, which is that this is way out in left field. So it's likely that I can't use video, my audio database for the video tapes. And I've actually gone a little further with this, and I think within video, like a U-matic and half inch and VHS and so on, I might need a data set for each one of those. And that's why getting folks to fill out this survey will be important, because I think it's going to be the same in the audio realm, where they've used different makes and the makes and models use different formulations or thicknesses or particle sizes, and that affects that spectra enough where I need to have different data sets. So the end goal of this project will be to, after validating that it works, put all that statistical processing online in a sort of click a button, yes, no, this is degraded or not, or if you really want to, you can look at the spectra, and then make that available and free to the public. And then you'll have access to all of our data sets. So the more data sets and more tapes we have access to, the bigger that'll grow, and the more accurate it should be as a processing tool. We will, in that process, address other tape formats, both audio and video. And this is really where I'm asking for your help. So if you want to fill out that survey, please let me know. Gladly let you do that and hopefully get in contact with you later about possibly measuring some tapes. And then if you have new old stock that you'd like to share, please let me know about that as well. And then a very small part of this grant and more of like my background is to say why. Why are these tapes different? And so we're using other techniques in our lab to try and get a better handle on what the chemical differences are between a degraded and a non-degraded tape, and asking maybe is there another or easier or faster method that we could use, maybe in line while you play it, or is there a way we can take a picture of the side of a reel? You know, because the first question you ask is where am I taking this data, and I'm taking it in the first 2 meters of the tape. Instead of, you know, all the way in at the hub, where a lot of times you'll find it's only degraded at the hub, right? And so there may be ways of looking through the side windows of a spool of tape and be able to image the whole thing and say, is it a degraded tape or not? And so we're working on that as part of the grant, and then but this chemical analysis might help us guide that path. And so I think, you know, did you, am I good? That's it, thank you. And then I'd just like to acknowledge these folks. They were of great help, and I want to thank the folks that sent me tape very trustingly. If you look at my name online, you'll find there's this huge conversation in one of the non-professional audio blogs where they were arguing about whether they should send me tape. I was stealing it from them so they couldn't record on it and so on. So it's kind of entertaining. It's like 10 pages. But anyway, I appreciate it very much.
Thank you very much, Eric. We will have time for questions at the very end. That's pretty amazing. It's great to see people actually doing the scientific research behind the tricks that we've been using in the past. So this is really amazing.